Back together, you and I, in a Tuesday, March 22nd edition of Connecticut Today, right here on WICC. We talked about a proposed bill targeting Connecticut landlords under the guise of energy efficiency. I think it's a scam. President Carol Platt Leibow of the Yankee Institute returned to the show to talk about a possible threat to the privacy of tax returns in the state. Jeannie Mancini, president of the March for Life Education and Defense Fund, stopped by to talk about a pro-life march taking place in Hartford. U.S. Air Force retired Major Sam Peters joined us to chat about the ongoing military situation in Ukraine. And we wrapped it up in the 5 o'clock hour. Chris Herb dropped by from the Connecticut Energy Marketers Association to update us on a coming scheduled vote regarding a proposed gas tax holiday in Connecticut. Are you a landlord? Do you have rental property? Do you rent a house? Do you have an investment property that you and your family, your husband, your wife, your significant other, whatever, have been using to get extra income, make a few bucks? Maybe you used to live in that house, then you kept it, moved to something smaller, and now you use the home you own, or still have a mortgage on for income. Well, if you are a renter, a landlord, somebody who rents to someone, the renter would be the tenant, the landlord would be the rentee, I guess, if I'm getting that right. The state of Connecticut is considering, now this has not been passed yet, this is in the discussion stage, but I often on this program like to keep you informed of stuff that's in the discussion stage, so you don't suddenly get a, hey, where did that come from thing. No, I don't believe in ambushing you like that. A bill that is being, I guess, supported by the governor and by Katie Dykes, who's the commissioner of the State Department of Energy and Environmental Protection. A bill would require, as in make law, a residential rental property must carry a label that is a snapshot of the unit's energy use, all right? So the way you, if you're at a big box store and you're going, oh, honey, look at that refrigerator. That one costs $110 a year to run. Or look at that one, honey, that costs $130 a year. And, you know, husband and wife, you together, you can make that decision. And guys, you know, we will do what the wife wants us. That's it. Come on, ladies, admit it. So basically, this would be a usage label on these rental properties. Same way you buy a car, right? We car shop, we say, hey, this car is really nice, but the mileage is a little less than I was looking for. But then, you know, you weigh the pros and cons, whatever. A little more in gas because I really like this car. Anyway, the idea here, according to Commissioner Dykes, is, quote, this bill puts more control over energy use into the hands of consumers. Well, okay. But then again, I look at this and say, well, wait a minute. How are they going to determine energy use when some people like to keep? Now, and this is honestly, I don't know whether this is written to the minutiae of the law of the proposal. Some people, like me, tend to like get a little cooler in the summer. That would cost more money in the summer, maybe, than most people would like. But yet I also don't like it as warm in the winter. You see what I'm saying here? So I don't know how they're doing this. And they say, well, this will give people more control. It'll save people money. No, it won't. Because if you really want to save people money, the tough way to do this, if you really want to save people money, crack down on what power companies are charging and don't rubber stamp every rate increase that's wanted by Eversource or UI. And of course, again, if a landlord didn't do this, it's going to cost you, where is it? I want to get this right here in the story. It would cost you $500. The state could fine you $500. Now, again, you're probably listening going, oh, Paul, you're just doing this to be cranky and get calls. No. The reason, though, I did want to open with this today is I noticed that this is typically how we handle stuff in this state. This state that's supposedly home. We always hear this, no matter what governor, Democrat or Republican. Oh, it's home to so many brilliant people at Yale and UConn and Wesleyan and Quinnipiac and Fairfield and Sacred Heart. Yet we never seem to attack stuff from the true cause. And the true cause on people getting screwed with power rates is not because, you know, there may be a couple of drafts in a rental property they're in, or because, you know, this floor is not insulated, or that floor is, you know, not insulated, or that window should be changed. No, it's because we have obscenely high power rates. We do, according to this one side I pulled up, Connecticut by the numbers. We are the fourth highest expensive state in the country for the price of electricity, averaging $411 a month. So when do we ever hear? Now, we're hearing this in The Current and, you know, some other publications. You know, we're hearing, oh, well, we have to label the energy efficiency of apartments. Okay. Or rental properties, condos, homes. All right. Do any of these people, the governors of this state, the commissioners that have to do with power regulation, do any of them ever come out and say, gosh darn it, people in this state are paying too much for electricity? Do we ever hear that? No, because that's the tough part. That is the tough part. And a lot of times we don't want to look at the tough issues. Again, like I said earlier this week, we have, some far left members of the General Assembly saying, hey, we need to really tax these billionaires because we need their money. Well, that's easy. You know, acting like 15 or 17 or 20 billionaires are your personal ATM machine, that's pretty easy. That's pretty easy, and thankfully the governor has said no to that because he knows how dumb it is, and he knows some of those people, all you need is one to leave. One or two of those billionaires leaves Connecticut, leaves Fairfield County, watch the tax dent if he or she leaves. You imagine if Steve Cohen, the new owner of the Mets, said, I'm out of here, I'm moving to Texas, or I'm moving to Florida. You know how much in tax you're going to lose right there? You talk about not being able to pay for state employees. So again, oh, my God, there's so much child poverty in this state. Well, you know why? Because there's a lack of jobs, of middle-class, solid, good to decent, well-paying, blue-collar jobs. And you know whose fault that is? It's the people that sit under that big golden dome in Hartford who go tax after tax, fee after fee, regulation after regulation, and a lot, not all businesses, but some, you pitch them, hey, come to Connecticut, and they go, why? Why come to Connecticut? Why? Well, let's look at the quality of the workforce. Okay, and look at your electric rates. Look at the taxes you want to charge on us, the fees, the taxes. So again, we'll keep an eye on this for you, I promise. Who knows, it may never get out of committee. Again, remember, it is an election year, and sometimes these bills are just brought up to make certain people feel good. Oh, we're looking at this for the future. Okay. If what I'm reading is true, and joining us right now, she was on a few days ago, but we had to have her back on this one. Carol Platt Leibow, the head of the Yankee Institute for Public Policy in Connecticut. Carol, thank you for coming back with us today on short notice. How are you?
I'm great. Good to be with you and your listeners,
Paul. Well, thank you, Carol. And this one is kind of maybe it is a head-scratcher, but maybe it isn't. So you folks at the Yankee Institute did your due diligence, and you went sniffing around in a proposed bill. Now, we should tell people this is not law yet, but when I got notice of this, I went, might people's tax returns, Carol, and tax information be available to now to lawmakers? Talk about what's going on here.
Sure. It is proposed Senate Bill 443, and what it does is, if it were passed, it would allow the certain legislators, the majority leader, the minority leader, certain other leaders in the House and the Senate in our state to simply be able to request the tax returns even of specific individuals. And the justification for this is so for the purpose of evaluating and formulating tax policy. But, I mean, come on, Paul.
I mean, what does that, what does that mean,
Carol? Right. And why do you need specific individuals? Why would the names need to be on them? And, you know, the larger principle is this. I mean, in a free country, individuals' private information, it's not accessible to politicians without a very good reason.
Yeah.
And there are always safeguards attached to that. Now, here you've got a proposed bill where politicians would be able to simply ask for the tax returns of any private individual on just this flimsy justification. There's no reason that any legislative official should have access to an individual's tax return. It opens the door to abuse. It opens the door to the weaponization of very personal and sensitive information. And it potentially chills everyone's free speech rights, because all of us can think of instances in the past where this kind of information has been misused.
Carol, it is amazing to read this. Now, Carol, this is my opinion, not yours. I want to make that clear. But to me, the minute I see something like this, Carol, and I see the union push behind it and some left-leaning legislators, I say, aha, they want to take a look at they want to get a better look into the billionaires in the state, the 17 to 20 billionaires who live primarily in lower Fairfield County, that they still try and get more and more tax money out of to, again, fortify their push for higher taxes on the wealthy. That's just me on that. What do you think?
You know, I don't know what the motivation is behind it. I don't care whether it's to look at their tax returns. I wouldn't care if it was because Republican leaders wanted to look at the union leaders' tax returns. Politicians have no business sniffing around in individual citizens' tax returns. This isn't why we pay taxes, and this isn't the way free people are supposed to be governed. If they need information about how taxes are collected in our state for the tax incident reports, it isn't hard to get individual names and other identifying information redacted, and that's how they can get the general information that any policymaker needs in order to make good policy. There is no reason for names and identifying information that strips citizens of their privacy to be attached to that.
See, Carol, it's frightening to me, and it should be frightening, I think, Carol. And I'm not saying that meekly here. People around this state, if this is the intent of this bill, as you say, that's just damn frightening as far as I'm concerned. Listen, we don't want tax scoff laws. We get that. But as my sainted Italian mother told me years ago when I was a wee tyke, Carol, and I was asking her about money, she said, I remember, Carol, like it was yesterday, she said, it's none of your business what anybody else makes. And I'll never forget that.
Well, and that's exactly right. As long as people are obeying the law, and all of us should, it is not the government's business how you spend your money, where you give your money, or what you do with your money. Transparency is for government. Privacy is for people. And what we've seen, Paul, in recent years is an explosive growth in non-residents paying state income taxes because people are able to limit the ability people are able to limit the time they spend in Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
They're able to be residents of Florida and spend half a year minus a day in Connecticut. This measure and the implicit threat of having your tax returns show up on the internet would almost certainly lead some people to decide to avoid Connecticut and our taxes altogether. And if you think about it, just aside from the fact that this is absolutely wrong on principle, it would also have adverse fiscal implications that apparently no one has thought about or estimated or disclosed to the people of our state who are likely to be impacted by them.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Carol, you know, if just one or two of these hedge fund people, much the way a guy did, I remember, Carol, a few years ago in North Jersey, if one or two of these people said, screw it, this is enough, I can't take this anymore, and they relocate to Florida or to the Carolinas or Myrtle Beach. I mean, and I think Governor Lamont kind of gets this, because, Carol, because he tries to tell the wacky part of his his confab there, his caucus, hey, don't do this. I mean, the state could be looking at millions and millions and millions of dollars in lost revenue.
Right. I think his name was Eddie Lampert. And he left northern New Jersey,
yeah.
And it had dire implications for the state budget. There are people who, if they left Connecticut, it would have a meaningful impact on our state. But, you know, aside from that, simply as Americans, all of us should shrink from the sort of authoritarian impulse that would lead any politician to think he or she has a right to look at an individual citizen's tax records. That's not anyone's business.
Yeah, it's frightening. Carol Platt-Leibau from the Yankee Institute. Check it out, folks, and read this story yourself. YankeeInstitute.org. Carol, I love the headline, Unions and Pals Push Nixonian Bill, Letting the Political Leaders See Your Tax Returns, because Mr. Nixon, Carol, you're correct in bringing this back as I hasten back to my Watergate days that got me into this business. Weaponizing the IRS back then was part of that, wasn't it?
It was, and we've seen it a couple of times since then. And the instrumentalities of government are supposed to serve the people. They're not supposed to be used by politicians to bully or intimidate the people of the United States who fund them. And so please ask your legislator to talk to the people on the Finance, Bonding, and Revenue Committee and have them strip this language from SB 443.
All right, SB 443, Carol Platt-Leibau heads the Yankee Institute. Check it out online, yankeeinstitute.org, and on social media as well. Carol, as always, keep fighting the good fight. We love you folks there, and we'll talk down the road. Thanks.
Thanks, Paul.
Appreciate it. All right. And folks, I'll get into a little bit more of this story when we come back, and I will tell you who is sponsoring this bill. This bill has three sponsors that could give legislators. Now, listen, is it aimed at the average person in Connecticut? No, probably not. But it could be. You never know. So who's behind this bill? Three left-leaning Democrats and the state unions. Not me making it up, folks. Hey, don't trash the messenger here. And pro-life forces here in the state are very happy, very excited. Tomorrow, the 23rd, is the March for Life here in Connecticut. As far as the abortion situation goes, that hot-button issue takes place in Hartford. To talk about that, Jeannie Mancini joins us. She's the president of the March for Life Education and Defense Fund. Jeannie, hi. It's Paula, WICC. Glad to have you. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks so much for having me.
Your organization, obviously, people get the gist of what it's about, but what role does your organization, Jeannie, take in the ongoing hot-button issue of abortion here in the U.S.?
Well, our organization began a year after Roe v. Wade and Doe v. Bolton were decided by the Supreme Court. So we officially were commenced, I guess you could say, in terms of a nonprofit organization in 1974. And our mission, sort of what we bring to the table in terms of building a culture of life, is to unite, equip, and mobilize pro-life Americans in the public square. And so we do that every year nationally with literally just hundreds of thousands of participants in Washington, D.C. And a number of years ago, we began our state march initiative and are happy this year to bring it to Connecticut.
A lot of people would hear that and maybe have heard that in the news, Jeannie, and say, well, okay, I may disagree with you, but you have a right to do that. But why on God's green earth would you do this in a blue state, Jeannie? Some people would say, well, Connecticut is already saying, no matter what happens at the high court, that there will always be abortion rights in the state. What would your response to that be?
Well, there is power in rallying the grassroots in any state, and we certainly don't only work in red states. We're trying to build a culture of life in all the United States. And so one small example of that is that we had our inaugural march in California back in August. And there in Sacramento on the steps of the Capitol, we gathered a pretty small crowd. I mean, I think we had about 750 people or so. And just by gathering that small but mighty crowd, I guess you'd say, we were able to get all of the people there to text in an alert to their state legislators about a really bad bill that wasn't protective of life. Specifically, it would have forced abortion in health insurance, even for private companies that didn't agree with it. And that bill got pulled the day after the California March for Life. So there is really power in numbers, even if it might seem like a state that's very pro-abortion or very sort of to the left on these issues. Lots can be done when we rally the grassroots.
Jeannie Mancini is the guest, appointed to the head of the president of the March for Life Education and Defense Fund. Way back in 2012, there is the first ever March for Life coming up in Hartford tomorrow. Jeannie, stand by. We'll talk more with you about this straight ahead. First, traffic and weather together right here on WICC. Our guest heads the March for Life Education and Defense Fund. Jeannie Mancini is with us. The Connecticut March for Life taking place tomorrow in Hartford. And Jeannie, let's cut to this now in this part of the interview. Obviously, you've seen and heard this now for years and years, a buzz phrase or a buzz line of thinking from the pro-choice folks out there, many of whom, you know, call this show, say, well, if you're against abortion, don't have one. What's been your response to that?
Well, the pro-life movement is really about serving mothers and babies in need. But, on one hand, I'm not interested in just kind of debating someone on the issue. But on the other hand, it's always interesting to get to the heart of why people think what they do. So whereas maybe little taglines aren't the best, I'd start by just saying, what about equal rights for unborn humans? You know, like, OK, to the argument that you don't want an abortion, don't get one. Well, it's actually not me that I'm worried about. I'm worried about the people in the womb that aren't given protection for their life.
And this all does, Jeannie, and I've done numerous topics on this over the 30 years that I've done shows on this. It really often does come down to when or at what point an individual person considers the beginning of life. Like, am I carrying a life, doesn't it?
It does. So much does come down to the science about when life begins. And the reality is that any, you know, bona fide scientist will admit that there are four things that are necessary for life to be defined as beginning. And all of those things are in place in a human being at the beginning of conception. And so, I would also just say that that when talking about someone about these issues, really, there's so much at stake in terms of emotions and the heart and what have you. And so really what's most important is to find out where a person's coming from and why, you know, and to try to get into that conversation with a person instead of just talking about, you know, the facts as we know them, science, etc.
There are, I believe there's a major case, Jeannie, in front of the U.S. Supreme Court now that I've read varying legal opinions on. But talk about this case that is there now that I guess if, depending upon the way It is finally ruled on by the High Court, Jeannie. This could effectively, if not in reality, overturn Roe v. Wade. What is that case about?
So that case is the Mississippi pro-life or abortion case. And essentially what that's asking is, should states be allowed to limit abortion prior to the time of viability? So really what's at stake in this case is a baby who is 15 weeks in gestation. Is it possible to make abortion illegal in that state after the time of 15 weeks? So there are a couple points to make here. One is that the United States is one of only seven countries around the world that allow abortion until birth, abortion, you know, late, so in the third trimester. And so this law at stake in Mississippi would simply bring our country in line with other countries around the world, for the most part, for example, most of the countries in Europe. Some of the countries that allow late-term abortion include North Korea and China. So now, under Roe and Doe, this is not allowed. Limiting abortion prior to the time of viability is not allowed. And so it's, you know, Mississippi is putting before the Supreme Court, should we allow pre-viability pro-life laws? And I would say yes, 110% yes. Could this law, if successful, could it possibly gut Roe v. Wade and return the question of abortion legislation to the state? It could. That's a real possibility. But I think it's really important for your listeners to know that if Roe v. Wade were overturned, what is not happening is abortion being made illegal. What is happening is abortion returning to the legislative branches in the states.
Yeah, that is an important, Jeannie Mancini, that is an important designation here that people don't understand. You know, they think all of a sudden every abortion in this country is going to stop. It's not. Much the way, Jeannie, you know, I liken it from a political point of view, the way it's argued. I mean, it's like gun rights. There are some states that control it tightly and some states that don't. So that is what every legal expert has told me, that it will just be then, you know, fought out on a state level. What is happening as far as the march in Hartford tomorrow, Jeannie?
Thanks so much for asking. So the rally will be on Capitol grounds. That's at 210 Capitol Avenue right in Hartford there. And that starts at noon. And then at 1 p.m., the actual march itself will happen around Bushnell Park. And I'm happy to report that we're not expecting rain. All week we had been expecting rain until today. And so it's going to be chilly, at least by this Virginian's standards, but it should be a beautiful day.
Yeah, we got to toughen you up tomorrow. That's not really chilly. You know, it's not, you know, I looked at the forecast. No, we got to layer up. Jeannie, what is the website that people could go to if they want more info on this?
They can check us out. Our national website is marchforlife.org, but the specifics about Connecticut are ctmarchforlife.org, and they can get all of the information there.
All right, ctmarchforlife.org. Jeannie Mancini. Jeannie, thank you, and hopefully we can chat down the road. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on.
Appreciate it. ctmarchforlife.org. All right, and again, folks, yeah, like Jeannie said, if these Supreme Court cases in any way come out against abortion rights or they restrict the rights, not much is going to change. No, really, honestly, everybody's going, oh, no, backroom abortions against, that's not going to happen. Because you will have access by state, almost the way it is now. Almost the way it is now. You will have states where, likely blue, left-leaning states, where you will have those states that will okay abortions up to the moment of birth because that's what the voters want there. And then you're going to have, you know, red-leaning conservative states who likely will allow it. I know a few say it's outlawed completely, but they will likely allow it, but with restrictions as to first trimester, second trimester, and aspects like that. Get another look now at the situation the Russian invasion of Ukraine from a gentleman who's retired from the military. He's currently running for Congress in Nevada's one of the Nevada districts. Joining us right now is retired U.S. Air Force Major Sam Peters, a Bronze Star recipient. He served in Afghanistan and Iraq, and he's running for the 4th District Congressional seat in the Silver State of Nevada. Major Peters, hi, it's Paul here at WICC in Connecticut. How are you?
I'm well, Paul. Thank you so much for having me on, and good afternoon to your listeners.
And why is it, Major, a lot of folks go from the military to politics? Before we start talking about Russia and Ukraine, I'm seeing more and more of that in on both parties. Why is that?
Well, I think there needs to be more of that. You know, we're at, in for Congress specifically, we're at the lowest point in history as far as congressmen and women with military experience running our government. And, you know, with what we go through in the military fighting, and like for me, I'll speak for myself here. I spent 20 years fighting for our country across the country and across the globe. And, you know, to come back, you know, under the guise of our Constitution, fighting for our Constitution, and to come back here and see the creep of socialism get as far as it has. In my district specifically, there's an absolute socialist Democrat in my seat. And it's just, that is not representative of the people of my district. It's not representative of the Constitution that they swear an oath to. And it's just, it's disgusting. So I'm standing up because, and again, I'm speaking for myself, I'm standing up because I love my country. I have small children. I want them to be able to love their country when they're my age. And under the track that this country is going, the direction it's going, if people don't stand up and fight back for what's right, we're gonna find ourselves in a Ukrainian situation or worse, Venezuela or something like that. So here I am.
So what do you see in this situation? Now we're getting, Major Peters, we're getting this talk of maybe there'll be finally some talks between Zelensky and Mr. Putin's people. Being 20 years in the military, what have you thought of this whole invasion and the scenario as to how it's played out?
Well, the whole scenario, you know, it's been an unprovoked, you know, invasion by Russia. My belief is that Russia felt that Ukraine was getting too close to the NATO allies. Russia has had a history of, you know, projecting their strength, you know, on the edges of their borders to prevent people from, you know, infringing on their you know, the Russian the nation. So, you know, for them to, you know, they're very close with Belarus. There's rumors now Belarus might be getting into the fray of this. They've certainly, the Russians have certainly gone through Belarus to get into Ukraine. So Belarus is doing the Western world and Ukraine no favors by allowing them in. You know, this, it's just been an atrocity that that Russia would do this to the Ukrainian people. And there's so much to it as far as, you know, his choices of targets, bombing hospitals, bombing shelters of where people are seeking refuge. You know, it's, you know, I agree with Joe Biden on very little, but for him to call Putin a war criminal, I do agree with that. I do not agree with how the world is handling that, specifically the UN and frankly, the NATO alliance.
All right, Major, hang on. Retired U.S. Air Force Major Sam Peters is with us for a few more minutes. And when we come back, I'll ask the Major, and having served in the Air Force, about this controversy regarding a no-fly zone. Yes, no, too much of a step, not enough. We'll talk about that coming up. Do a little business to traffic and weather together. 4:36 on WICC. Taking a look at what is going on, what is happening, and what is not happening in Ukraine with the continued Russian invasion. This gentleman served 20 years in the U.S. military, a U.S. Air Force retired Major Sam Peters, Bronze Star recipient for service in Afghanistan and Iraq. And he's also entering the political realm now, Republican candidate for Nevada's 4th Congressional District. Major, everybody is banding around this idea of a no-fly zone. Some people are in the middle here. Some people say yes, definitely. Some people say no way. What are your thoughts on this? And, Major, a lot of people don't understand how complicated this would be, do they?
No, we really don't sometimes. When we talk about no-fly zones, if you don't have much experience in how these things work, and you're thinking, you know, it's great for the Ukrainian people to protect the air over them and stop the bombings, and that, all of that is absolutely true. But you also have to look at it from a context of what it does to the situation on the ground. It is the equivalent of putting boots on the ground. It is absolutely equivalent. You put jets over airspace in Ukraine, it would turn into fighting in the air over Ukraine between the United States and Russia. And that's what the Ukrainians are asking for. That's what the people who want this no-fly zone, that's what they're asking for, whether it's the United States doing it or the NATO allies that are doing it. Again, we've got a treaty with NATO, so if NATO goes, we've got to play in that. And, you know, I don't believe that we want to be in that type of war with Russia. And there's another context to this as well that has been lost. Mm-hmm. And that context is that the war between Ukraine and Russia, this is a civil war of sorts that has been going on for almost a century. This war around Ukraine and that land, it has taken different directions, obviously, over that 100 years. But it goes back, you can do some research on this, back to Stalin taking over Ukraine back in his day and you know, being the murderous person that he was. So there's a lot of history here. And there's, you know, a no-fly zone over Ukraine. Ukraine has an air force. The Russian Air Force hasn't done much as far as capturing the air. And if they had, maybe this war wouldn't have lasted so long as it has. But I'll tell you what, and I'm not on the side of Putin for this at all.
Sure.
The Ukrainians are doing an incredible job fighting back. And, you know, they have an air force of their own to do this with. So that's kind of my take on it. But again, when you look at a no-fly zone, you have to look at it from the context of boots on the ground, because that's what it is.
Are you surprised, Major? And our guest is retired U.S. Air Force Major Sam Peters, who's now looking to get into Congress in the 4th District in Nevada, the Silver State there, of which I worked in a long time ago, Major, for only a few months. But anyway, in this situation, are you surprised, and are any of the military contacts you have surprised at the reports, Major, that we're hearing about, and even though Russia is doing the vast destruction that they are, reports that the Russian troops are undermanned, the training is poor, they're doing this trying to maneuver in mud, they can't do that, the timing of this was off, their equipment is not well maintained. What are your thoughts on that?
You can look at some of the photos and the pictures of what's been happening as this thing's transpired. And when you look at specifically that time frame where the Russians had a 40-mile track of armored vehicles sitting on a road for days upon days, you can take that into context on how sophisticated the Russian ground forces are. Because from a strategic standpoint, you don't take 75% of your armored vehicles, put them in one place, and allow the enemy to pick them off at will. That's what Ukraine did. They started blowing up that column, and it stalled Russia for a week or two. Russia has since reverted to cruise missiles from the ocean to destroy their targets. They've reverted to some other tactics, but again, the sophistication and the lack of strategic thought and planning is very evident in that one scenario, and that's a major misstep by the Russians. And you know, the best thing we can hope for Ukraine is that they continue their fighting spirit and Russia continues to make those missteps, which I believe they will.
Finally, Major, how do you think this ends? I know that's a tough question, but yeah. What's the best case scenario here?
Well, I think there's two scenarios. I think Russia pulls back. And, you know, early on before this started, remember, Putin said he wanted those two provinces, those separatist provinces on the eastern side of Ukraine. So one of the end games is this, that he saves face and says he got what he wanted, and he pulls his troops back and he just keeps those two areas, which he has control of for the most part now. That's one possibility. The other possibility is a much grimmer one. Putin being the guy that doesn't want to save face but wants wants to claim victory. He takes it in a much larger direction, and we got to keep in mind that he is a nuclear power, and that's something that we can't lose sight of.
He is a Bronze Star recipient for service in Iraq and Afghanistan and a Republican candidate for Congress in the 4th Congressional District out there in Nevada, retired Air Force Major Sam Peters. Major, thank you. Appreciate it, and good luck in the election season. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much. SamPeters4Congress.com. Have a great day.
All right, we'll check it out, Major. Thank you. SamPeters4Congress.com, trying to win a seat in Nevada. Tomorrow, the General Assembly is set to vote on what would be a gasoline tax holiday here in the state for the final 3 months of the fiscal year. That would be April, May, and June. There is a motion here by the governor and the legislative leaders in the state to give you and I, who pull up to the pump, and it cost me $60 last time I did it, when, geez, a couple of years back, it would cost me, $25, $30, to give us a little relief, at least till the end of the fiscal year. Chris Herb has been following this as head of the Connecticut Energy Marketers Association, SEMA. We welcome Chris back on. He'll give us a little insight as to what is going to happen tomorrow, we think. Hey, Chris, it's Paul again, sir. How are you?
Good afternoon. Not that good under the circumstances.
Yeah, so, Chris, and I've been telling people since the beginning of the show that they may want to stick around for this segment with you because, again, Chris, as I've been wanting to say, oftentimes in Connecticut, when we can do it the easy way or the hard way, we tend to take the hard way. So what can you tell us about what may or may not happen tomorrow?
Well, I can tell you, calling it a gas tax holiday is a little bit of a misnomer here, from the standpoint that if the state fails to include a way to credit or refund the tax that's already paid on the gas that's in the tanks, then it may take days or over a week for the 25-cent savings to actually be delivered at the street price. So this doesn't seem like much of a holiday when you have to wait for your present for a week or so.
So what is happening here, Chris? Explain how we're doing it, and I guess there are other states that are doing it the more sensible way, you think, versus taxes already paid on something that's in the ground. And, you know, what are the legislative leaders telling you about this?
Yeah, so what we're hearing is that our suggestion as gasoline retailers to do it the way that Maryland did it, which was basically they said, take an inventory at the end of the day, before the tax is suspended, and we will credit that money back to you so that when someone fills up the next day, they can get the tax-free gasoline. That's the way that Maryland did it, and we are asking for that to be adopted here in Connecticut. It seems at this hour that they're still unwilling to do that. So it's unfortunate that that your gas station may not be the one that's going to be able to give immediate relief at the pump unless this is adopted the way that Maryland did it.
Okay, so Chris, explain this now to people who may have just heard you and said, well, wait a minute, Chris, so is it going to be legal? I'm sure people are wondering here, if the General Assembly passes it, what are the chances that I might not get that relief right away? What are we talking about here?
Yeah, I'm going to tell you that. So typically, when the state increases taxes, they will have us go and take an inventory of the product that the new tax or the increased tax is on. And then our retailers actually have to send a check to the state to prepay for the higher taxes. We've said, take the same approach, but allow us to deliver the lower prices. So our customers will end up not receiving an immediate benefit to the tax holiday in the same way that the state, when they increase taxes, that immediately is passed on. So what we're asking for, and there's still a chance because they don't vote until tomorrow, what we're asking for is for them to give that credit so that we can pass the tax savings along. If you're in a more suburban or rural area, it could take days or more than a week before you actually get to the tax-free gallons, which can only be passed along to the public once you sell what you have in inventory. In the cities, in the places where tanks turn over more quickly, the tax savings may be delivered the next day. It all depends on how much gas they sell when it goes into effect.
Chris, it never fails here in the great state of Connecticut, doesn't it? It just If the shortest distance, Chris, according to my high school geometry, between two points is a line, we oftentimes, Chris, and I know you've been watching this for years like I have, we don't go straight line here. We go a little curve, and then we go to the right angle, and then we do a rhombus, and then we come back. It's so frustrating sometimes. It really is.
It is frustrating because my members, the people who live in these communities that sell gasoline, are the ones who are going to take it on the chin. They're the ones that the customers are going to come in and be angry with. And like I said, the legislature has no problem passing tax increases along immediately on inventory. They should do the same thing for when they're actually trying to help. We're all in agreement that we want relief. Do it in an efficient way so that people see that the good work that they're trying to accomplish.
All right, Chris Herb. Chris, thank you so much, and we'll keep an eye on what happens tomorrow. Any idea, Chris, offhand, and maybe you don't know, do you know what time that vote is supposed to be or not? What are they telling you?
I believe that they're taking up in the House first. Okay. It's going to be an emergency certification bill, so it'll probably be around midday, okay, and then it'll be sent to the Senate.
All right, we'll keep an eye on it. Chris, as always, thank you. Chris from SEMA. Chris, thank you.
Thank you very much.
All right, there you go. So there you go, folks. Again, here in Connecticut, we can do it the easy way, we can do it the way other states do it, or we can do it our way. So apparently, there you go. So if your local gasoline station is a high-traffic station, which may get a delivery, I don't know, you see those tanker trucks in there, maybe, you know, once, twice a week, you'll probably get the discounted gas quicker than you will. As Chris said, if you live in the outskirts somewhere, you're in a farm area of Connecticut, or you live in a smaller municipality, it's just going to take you a while longer. This is interesting, Chris. I have a news release here. This is the great thing about doing shows like this, because you learn stuff. An average gasoline station. Now listen to this, kids. An average gasoline station typically has two tanks, 10,000 gallons each or 20,000 gallons in total. One tank is for unleaded gasoline, one is for premium. If the state excise tax of 25 cents per gallon is suspended and those tanks are full, gas station owners would lose $5,000 in tax money, if not more, if they had already paid in full to the state. So the state is apparently telling the station owners, well, too bad. We're not going to give you credit for the taxes you paid. Oh, man. Yeah, and again, this goes back to what I'm saying, the attitude that state government has to our businesses. Phew, you know, the flick of the, phew, right there to you. Yeah, be happy you're here. Be happy you are anointed to live and work in the People's Republic of Connecticut.